It was a full-blown political campaign. Yard signs, full-page ads, rallies, and it dominated the scene in Eau Claire the first quarter of last year. Yet there were no candidates. Instead, the hullabaloo came from referendum issues on the ballot for both the city of Eau Claire and Eau Claire County. Both questions dealt with whether or not these entities should help pay for a new development featuring an arts center, student apartments, and businesses in downtown Eau Claire called the Confluence Project. The Confluence Project survived that April election vote last year, but the dust has not yet settled. Funding for the project's local government partners and private developers appears to be set, and the private funding continues to progress, but the governor's proposed budget for state funding is below what was hoped for and continues to face scrutiny in the legislature. We'll spend the full hour talking about the Confluence Project today on Spectrum West. I'm Dean Kallenbach, the voice you normally hear at this time on this show. Al Ross is on jury duty. Al's back next week, though. The structure of today's show is also a bit out of the norm for Spectrum West, but we'll be dealing with an issue important to the arts and the community in general on a special call-in edition of the show. Later in the hour, we'll bring in proponents of the project, Ben Richgruber and Mike Rindo, and we'll also hear from Rick Eisenberg, who leads a group that's suing the city over its use of special tax districts to support the new construction. But we open the program with a reporter who has been covering the Confluence Project since its inception, Andrew Dowd of the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. Welcome, Andrew.
Good morning, Dean.
Now, two notes before we begin with Andrew. One, in the interest of full disclosure, I once served on the board of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council, which has come out in support of the Confluence Project and the new Center for the Arts. I was not on the board at the time it took that action, but I want you as a listener to know that going in. Secondly, we do welcome and encourage your questions and comments on this issue. You can call 800-228-5615 to join the conversation. Again, that's something we don't normally do during Spectrum West, but it's a little bit different today. We're going 1 hour on this full issue, and we'd like to hear from you. 800-228-5615 to join the conversation. So, Andrew Dowd, the Confluence Project survived those referendum votes in last April's election, and the project continues. You've been chronicling the progress of the project. Give us a thumbnail sketch of the developments from the past year.
Well, about a year ago, there was a citywide and a countywide referendum. The results of the city ended basically with 60% of the voters supporting the Confluence Project. When it came to the county, which includes more rural towns and villages, the support was a little bit softer, about 54%. But in both cases, backing the project. And those referendums were initially, pressured to get on the budget by people who were generally opposed to the Confluence Project. So this has been a mark of support that a lot of the other Confluence backers have been able to point to and say that generally 60% of the community favors this downtown art center and mixed-use building with apartment-style housing and shops and restaurants and everything. So here we are a year later, and as you said in your introduction, we're kind of waiting for the state legislature to start getting through its budget a little bit deeper. Well, right now that's in the Joint Finance Committee. And at the same time in Eau Claire, fundraisers are working to raise $13.5 million in private contributions to the project. And that's seen as really important because that'll not only provide $13.5 million toward the overall price tag of $40 million, it's also going to be a signal to state leaders that there is a local support and a local share for this project and that people are interested in it.
The most visible part impact of the project in the past year has been that one block area at the Confluence where the buildings were raised and there was a big hole for quite a while. Mm-hmm. Now there's some construction happening. What is it that we're seeing and why are we seeing it before all the funding is approved for the overall project?
Well, that is the private development part of the project. The first thing you saw was underground parking. Now we're getting the first few levels of it, starting out with shops and restaurants in the first floor, and then it'll be five stories of apartments above. We're seeing that one first because that one's getting private financing. So the developer said right away that building's going to go up first before the art center. The art center site is already cleared and ready to go as soon as they can. But again, they need to make sure all the funding is secure.
Well, we referenced the fact that that vote last spring wasn't the only political hurdle the Confluence Project has to step over. That funding plan is counting on state money, and that picture has changed a couple of times in the past year. A year ago, we thought it was a building commission thing or having to go initiate with the legislature, but that all changed.
Yeah, Governor Walker paid a visit, a couple of visits to Eau Claire, and kind of the nod of his cap he gave to local leaders and Confluence backers was you don't necessarily want to go through the route of a regular UW system funding option for this art center. UW-Eau Claire is going to be a partner in this project. They're going to have a space inside of there for classes and then also performances. But the governor recommended instead going for a type of a state grant that's included in the budget. And so that's the route they've been proceeding. But in his visit last fall, he once it came out in the January budget proposal, it came out that he wanted to give $15 million to the project. Backers had initially sought $25 million. And it was still met with a lot of enthusiasm seeing that state support in there at that amount, especially in a budget where there's a lot of other cuts coming down. And we're going to be competing up against the new Milwaukee Bucks Center down in Milwaukee, and that'll be interesting to hear how that all comes out. But backers were enthused about it. Of course, it did result in a little bit of a scaling back of the Art Center. Now the price tag is at about $40 million, and the change in the design so far, all we've heard is that one of three theaters, the smallest one, a 250-seat theater, was removed from the project. Instead, now the two theaters, one will be about 1,200 seats and the other one about 450 seats.
Mm-hmm. Another key component to the funding mechanism is the private donations. Seems there's a news conference every other week or so announcing a new contribution from a company or a philanthropist.
Yeah, when I was at a news conference just a few days ago when a local contractor, Market & Johnson, they contributed to the project $250,000. Mm-hmm. In the overall picture right now, we've heard they're past the halfway point of their $13.5 million. They're in the neighborhood of $8 million. But it's coming closer to crunch time if they want to meet that goal by the time that the Joint Finance Committee is finished with their work down in Madison. They're supposed to be coming up with their budget recommendation sometime in the spring for the full state legislature, and then the new budget goes into effect the beginning of July. So the project, the Confluence project, was introduced May 2012, so we're about 3 years past that. But now to raise the last half of the funding, the pressure's on to get that done in the next 3 months or less.
Now, there's still some vocal opposition to the project, and some of that opposition has come in the form of lawsuits.
Yeah, there's two lawsuits against the city right now. Both have been pushed by a group called Voters with Facts, which is a group of citizens that have been skeptical or scrutinizing the city's contributions to the project. And the first lawsuit, that's actually scheduled to be resolved in the next few weeks by a judge's decision. And that lawsuit was filed opposing the city's action to go into closed session to talk about development agreements with the Confluence project. The Voters with Facts people say that the city inappropriately used the closed session law, and the city's response is that, no, they followed the proper procedure. The second lawsuit was filed just last month, and it was done with the assistance of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, and that one is challenging the expansion of the downtown tax increment financing districts, and that is the mechanism that is helping with the city's contribution to the Confluence project.
We'll hear from a representative of that group later in the show. We're updating the Confluence Project on this special call-in edition of Spectrum West. I'm Dean Kallenbach, in for Al Ross. Andrew Dowd of the Leader Telegram stays with us through the hour, and later we will hear from that attorney representing a group challenging the validity of the method being used by the city to finance its obligation for that project and others. But next, we invite in two proponents of the project. Mike Rindo of UW-Eau Claire and Ben Richgruber of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council. Join us with your questions at 800-228-5615. This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for WPR comes from the UW-Madison School of Social Work, offering a part-time Master of Social Work degree with Saturday-only classes held in Madison and Eau Claire. socwork.wisc.edu/part-time. Support also comes from the Kane Family Pass-Through Fund within the Community Foundation of Chippewa County. Information about establishing or contributing to funds via the Community Foundation of Chippewa County is at yourlegacyforever.org.
We're back with this special call-in edition of Spectrum West. Al Ross is off on jury duty. I'm Dean Kallenbach. The Confluence Project, where it is now, is the topic of today's show, and we would like to include your questions and comments in the mix. 800-228-5615 is your number to join the conversation. Andrew Dowd, who covers this story for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram, is providing analysis for us today. And we're also now joined by two voices that have been in the forefront of this project from its beginning. From back, actually before its beginning, during the Clear Vision Facilities Forums we broadcast a couple years ago. Ben Richgruber is Executive Director of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council, also known as ECRAC, which manages the State Theater. And Mike Rindo is the Vice Assistant Chancellor for Facilities and University Relations at UW-Eau Claire. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Mike Rindo, let's start with you. I remember a meeting that you helped pull together at UW-Eau Claire back in the fall of 2007 with representatives of arts organizations throughout the community to talk about the need to work together on facilities. When you were calling that meeting, when you were putting that meeting together, is the Confluence Project what you envisioned when you called that meeting?
I don't know if it's what we envisioned, but what we did envision was an opportunity for the university and the community and the local arts organizations to join forces to work on something that could benefit both entities, because we both had desperate need for improved facilities, both the State Theater in downtown Eau Claire and CARE Theater on campus were, I think, even at that point viewed as, if not obsolete, very close to that, without putting significant money into each of them in order to bring them up to today's standards. I think what we've determined both for Ben's facility and for ours is that it really isn't worth that investment to do that. So I think it was more an exploratory, how can we work on this together rather than do the traditional thing, which is do your own, this is mine, that's yours, and especially only being a mile apart or less than a mile apart. That way going forward just didn't make a lot of sense at the time, and I don't think it makes any sense today.
Do you feel that there is a coalescing of the community arts groups around the Confluence Project, or is it is there more enthusiasm from some than others?
No, I really think that there's a coalescing. Ben can talk to this more specifically from the community arts organizations, but from the university's perspective, we view this as a great opportunity not only for improvement of our facilities, but also from a more holistic perspective of making the community a better place to live, which enables us to attract better faculty and staff, and enables us to attract better students. And so there's that, but there's also the whole notion of how can we have our students, faculty, and staff have what I call creative collisions when they're working together and have opportunities to do things that they may not do if they just stay in their own orbit. So that's the university's perspective.
Before we get to Ben on the other arts groups, I do want to ask you, Mike Rindo, UW-Eau Claire's role has changed significantly in the past year in this project. Do those changes diminish the university's enthusiasm about the project at all?
Absolutely not. What we've been saying all along is we are a committed partner to this project. How we get there isn't as important as getting there. And yes, the path, as Andrew described, has veered, and we've taken some twists and turns, but we're still looking at $15 million in investment from the state of Wisconsin, which would directly benefit the university and the community. And so we really view this as an opportunity to make a huge leap in the facilities that we have for the performing arts.
Now, Ben Richgruber, you've been a vocal proponent of the Confluence Center for the Arts from the start, yet you manage a historic 1,000-seat theater just a block away. Why do we need the Confluence Project when we have the State Theater?
The State Theater is falling apart. It was built in 1926 as a vaudeville house, and it served its purpose for a very long time. It was a movie theater, and then in the mid-80s converted to the art center that it is now. But the business of the arts has changed, and that building no longer fits the business that we're in. So for the local arts groups to continue to be successful and to grow, they need to be in a different space that suits the needs of today's theatrical productions, both local and touring. So that building has been a fantastic building for a long time. But if we want to keep a strong art scene, we need to look to the future.
How involved will the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council, which you represent, how involved will they be in the new arts center?
Very. Very. We're looking at all the different operating options and models right now. Actually, last week, Mike and I were chatting about different ways that the university can handle facilities, operations, or things of that sort, and how the local community can operate. So we expect to be very involved in the new project when it moves forward. We'll continue to program touring shows that come through the space and be very active in the visual arts scene as well.
So you're not putting yourself out of a job?
I sure hope not. But if I do, it's for a darn good cause.
What will happen to the state?
Well, no decisions have been made on that yet. It's a beautiful building, and the last thing we want to do is see that be torn down. So if anyone tells you we're tearing it down, tell them they're wrong. But we will right now, ECRAC owns and operates that building, and we will likely sell it when the time comes for us to move into the new space. But we have worked with some great developers and some architects have toured the space, and there are a lot of ideas out there to repurpose that space, for another 90-plus years. So I think there's a lot of opportunity, but can we say specifically right now what will happen? No, we can't.
Now, ECRAC is one of many arts groups in town. You have many of the other arts groups as constituents.
Yes.
Are they all in on this project, or are some more enthusiastic than others?
There's been very general and broad support for this. Everybody knows the limitations of the State Theater that they're using right now. So everybody's been excited and looking forward to using this facility. There are obviously questions, what will the rates be? Can they afford to be in there? And of course, the answer to that is they have to be able to afford to be in there. It only works if everybody can use the space. And dates, with the university coming into play now, there'll be more people that want to use the space. And we've done a couple of different calendars, and they all seem to work out fairly well. So really, those are the two main concerns, is rates and dates. But in general, everybody likes the concept, and we've already seen a lot of new collaborations happening, knowing that we're going to be moving into this space. We've got a lot of shared box office services, and that just continues to grow. This last season, the Theater Guild hopped on board with ECRAC for our central ticketing system. So now we've got Community Arts, the Jazz Orchestra, the Theater Guild, and all the ECRAC shows doing that. The Jazz Orchestra is also partnering with us on marketing projects. So there are a lot of doors being opened just by the fact that this conversation is happening.
That's the voice of Ben Richgruber. He's the executive director of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center. Mike Rindo from UW-Eau Claire, Andrew Dowd from the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram are also here as we do a special Spectrum West call-in on the topic of the Confluence Center. A year after the spring referendum votes in Eau Claire County and the city of Eau Claire that affirmed funding from those two entities, we wanted to see where things stand right now. I'm Dean Kallenbach in for Al Ross. Our first caller is with us. It's Dave from Augusta. Dave, welcome to Spectrum West.
Good morning, everybody. Beautiful rainy day here. Caught your show on the way into work. I hope this all works out. I'm a little leery. As I've called in before on Spectrum West, I am from the Madison area. I'm old enough to have witnessed the demolition of an old theater in K Street in Madison turned into the Civic Center in the middle, late 70s. That brought in some nice, some famous acts and some great plays in the theater and arts. However, it couldn't keep its head above water, so the city ended up taking over the management of that facility. And then the Overture Center was funded greatly by Mr. Frouchy from Webcrafters of Madison. He poured a lot of his own millions of dollars into it. And I wanted to hear your guest's responses to the question, is that facility, the Overture Center of Madison, is it making a profit now? Or is it still being funded by the city or the state of Wisconsin?
And Ben Richgruber, I don't know if you know the specifics on the Overture Center, but the concept of, hey, once you build this thing, can you afford to keep it running? That's a real issue that people have brought up.
That's a very real issue. That's what we at ECRAC have been dealing with at the State Theater. It's one thing to open it. It's another thing to operate it. As far as Overture in Madison is concerned, we've learned a lot about what not to do by looking at that. Overture was primarily funded by one donor, Mr. Frouchy, as you mentioned. And then when things did turn south, there was no community support to rally and fill the gap. So that was one major issue. And we obviously got much broader community support for this. Not that Madison doesn't love that building. We also have the university as a partner. In Madison, less than a mile away, you've got multiple university theater spaces and gallery spaces. And so now you're splitting and dividing, and you've got to operate multiple spaces. Well, here we're putting that all into one space. So we've got guaranteed usage by the university, guaranteed usage by the community, and that really makes the operating budget much, much more attainable than it would be if any of us tried to do it alone. So there is truly strength in the partnership, and the broad-based community support has come a long way. Now, Overture has been around for about a decade now, I think about 10 years, mm-hmm. and they've turned things around there. I think the big news last year for Overture is that Overture wasn't big news, and they appreciate that. There is still some city funding in there. I'm not sure how that all shakes out or at what level, but it is running on its own now. It's very successful, and their programming has turned around, and lots of community support and obviously continued development down there around State Street. And we're already seeing that happen here in Eau Claire, too. So we definitely learned a lot from looking at Overture, what works and what doesn't work.
Confluence Project is still big news, and that's what we're talking about here today on Spectrum West. Mike Rindo, the governor, put $15 million in his budget proposal for the Confluence Project. That's $10 million less than you were hoping for, but still a considerable statement of support considering all the cuts in his proposal. Does that downsizing, you talked about it a bit, but does the loss of that small theater, does that damage the project?
Well, let's talk about how the governor put this into his budget. He put it in as a matching grant for economic development. And I think that's a really important point because this really is an economic development project. All you have to do is take a look at what's happening downtown right now based on the promise of the Confluence Arts Center going forward. There's been about $70 million of private investment that has been committed to downtown Eau Claire because of the promise of this project, whether it be Jamf with its $12 million building, the apartments down there, the reinvestment in the Green Tree Suites. You take a look at what's going on with the remodeling of the Lismore, and not to mention Haymarket Landing, which is the project that Andrew talked about earlier. So it really is an economic development project. Why is that? Not only because of the infrastructure, but also when you talk to people like Zach Holmstad from Jamf Software, you talk with Randy Litton from Mayo Health Systems, they say that this kind of art center and this kind of development is crucial. It's vital to them to being able to attract the best and brightest people to come here, to live here, to work here, to raise their families here, to send their children to school here. Because you don't just compete as a community based on the roads, although those are important, and some other factors, but quality of life is very important. And that's why I believe the governor put it in as an economic development grant. Now, to your second part of your question, which is what are we doing? We had just last week a day-long, another workshop with the architect and engineering design firm that's working on the Art Center design. And what we're looking at is having, because of the as we say, $15 million is not $25 million. So you have to make some changes. But what we aren't going to do is we're not going to compromise the quality of the facility that we're going to build. They listened to what all of the different user groups had to say, and taken all of that into consideration, and have come back with what we think is a very good solution to the issues that we've had to deal with because of the reduced funding. And that is, we're really going to put together an extraordinary, I think, main hall, which would be the 1,200 to 1,500 seat hall. Then there'll be a second performance space that is a very flexible performance space that will be about 400, but it can be configured in a number of different ways that you could do theater in the round, you can do thrust, you can do front-on performances. And then we're going to take one of the very large spaces that was originally thought of as a rehearsal and warm-up space, which is about 3,000 square feet, and we're going to take a look at making that into the more flexible black box concept that was originally thought of. So we really still are looking at three primary performance venues within the space, and that's thanks to the creativity of the people who are working on it, both the folks that were providing input and also the design team.
Great to have the support of the governor. I mean, it's certainly better than not having the support of the governor. But legislators are getting a lot of pressure to restore funding cuts to many areas of the budget that support education, nature, disability programs. Won't legislators from Milwaukee or Madison or Green Bay see this allocation of a $15 million upstate handout and just prune it to save something else?
Who knows what the legislature will do? When we're having our conversations with legislators, we are talking to them about not only the economic development aspects of this, but also the collaborative nature. You know, when we say that there have been two referendums that provided a great deal of support for the project, as Andrew talked about, as well as the collaborative nature, having the county in, having the city in, having philanthropy in, having the arts organizations in, having the philanthropy come to the table. What we hear back is this is a great example of collaboration and how communities can work together on planning and executing a project like this. And so that's how we're working to talk to legislators about it. And I have to tell you, they've been very receptive. You know, they come back and they say, looks like a great project. Love the collaboration. Love the community support. Yeah, this is going to be a tight budget. But, you know, we're working with our area legislators, and we're very grateful to our representatives and senators from this area, Senator Moulton, Senator Vinehout, and Representatives Walks, Petrick, Bernier, and Larson have all signed a letter of support to the Joint Finance Committee saying that this is a project they support. This is the project that this community and this region needs.
Ben Richgruber, the private funding of the project is about halfway to its $13.5 million goal. Is that the tracking you'd hope for? And will those funds have the effect, as Mike Rindo was talking about earlier, of leveraging the state dollars?
Yes, I think we are on track to hit our goal. And every dollar, this part of the process has been the one that's moved pretty smoothly from the beginning. We had a donation when the project was announced from RCU of $1 million. And we've continued to receive pledges from both companies and individuals as the project has moved forward. Even if things were, you know, confusing with referendums at the city and county level or not quite clear at the state level, people continued to show their support by pledging those dollars. And they continue to do that. So we are on track. We feel very confident in our goal and our progress. And every time we get one, it spurs a few more. So every day I'd probably get an email in my box with another confirmed pledge. And it's a good thing. And we're just going to keep pushing forward.
We're updating the Confluence Project on the special edition of Spectrum West, the Wisconsin Public Radio's arts magazine. I'm Dean Kallenbeck, filling in for Al Ross today. Andrew Dowd is with us from the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram, Mike Rindo from UW-Eau Claire, and Ben Richgruber from the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council, all guests at this time on this program. WPR and our partners with Wisconsin Public Television and UW Extension regularly hold listening sessions in communities around the state to get a sense of the big issues in that community. It happened that our meeting in Eau Claire last year was in January, as all the referendum talk was getting going. The facilitator had trouble getting the group to comment on other issues other than the Confluence Project during the two-hour session. One point that was brought up in those sessions was a concern from folks involved in issues about homelessness and poverty, that this downtown development and other downtown development reduces the availability of affordable housing in the community. Mike Rindo, is that a concern for supporters of this project and the other downtown development that's happening right now? And is there something being done as part of this to ameliorate that problem?
I serve both on the Downtown Eau Claire Incorporated Board of Directors and the Clear Vision Board of Directors. And I can tell you that it's a topic that is discussed at those meetings. I'm also serving as a citizen member of the city's comprehensive plan update group, and the whole notion of the inner city or the city core and aging neighborhoods and poverty and discrepancy between the people who are more wealthy and those who are you know a little less well off is getting a lot of traction, and I do think it's something that we need to carefully look at as you know we continue with development and infill in the central core area of Eau Claire. Do we have solutions? I don't think there is a solution. I think it's going to take a lot of different kinds of thinking about it, but certainly that's something that has to be looked at carefully and addressed.
Ben Richgruber, the Clear Vision group that you and Mike Rindo both worked on relating to facilities. One of the things that was talked about a lot and has been talked a lot about a lot with the Downtown Eau Claire Incorporated and other organizations is trying to develop a new culture in downtown, trying to make it a kind of a haven for young people and that sort of thing. Ben Richgruber, with your assessment, you work downtown. You are in the state theater as part of your office. As you look around you from the time you came here in 2007, is that evolution happening? And is this project and the other downtown projects is that something that's contributing, or is that actually is it not a factor?
I think we've seen huge downtown growth and development since I've been. It's been 7.5 years now, and it's been a very steady change in downtown for the better. Lots of new buildings and apartments in there, lots of residents. And yeah, we always talk about, you know, getting in the young people and, you know, make it a hip environment. But there are a lot of people that are retiring and moving downtown because it's a great place to be. There's entertainment, there's shopping, there's food, there's just more and more of that. And every development sort of spurs the next. And it's really created a great critical mass of excitement downtown with the Farmers Market and Phoenix Park and all the concerts and music and entertainment. So it has been a very positive change for downtown, and it just keeps moving.
Andrew Dowd, there are two lawsuits pending relating to the City of Eau Claire's involvement in the Confluence Project. What are those about, and where do they stand right now?
Well, one of them is, like I said earlier, the closed session meeting concern, and that lawsuit came up last year. And right now it's getting to the point where both sides are making their last final written arguments for it, and that's supposed to be decided this spring by an Eau Claire County judge. The outcome of that will just be deciding whether or not the plans that the city put in place to provide its contribution to the project, which is $5 million directly to the Art Center, and then also $5.9 million to the mixed-use building and that site over there. The lawsuit will essentially determine the outcome of whether or not that was an action that the city could have taken. That's basically the same thing for the second lawsuit, too. It would impact the city contribution, and in that one, it's debating whether or not the city properly followed TIF district laws, that's tax increment financing. And what that does is it allows the city to put in new infrastructure and put an investment in an area that it has deemed as blighted or in need of redevelopment. And then new buildings that go up there, their taxes for a time go toward paying off those city improvements. So if the city needs to bring in new utility lines, new streets to an area that had just gotten dilapidated through the years, this is the mechanism for it to do that and attract new businesses. And it's something that the city and places all over Wisconsin have used for a long, long time now.
Mike Rindo, are you concerned that the lawsuit involving the tax incremental financing districts will bog down or stop the Confluence Project?
You know, we've had a lot of different twists and turns that have occurred here, and you just, you know, with universities not involved at all in any of those legal proceedings, so you just have to see how they play out.
We are. That was the voice of Mike Rindo of UW Eau Claire. Ben Richgruber of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council has joined us for the past several minutes as well. Thank you for joining us today on Spectrum West. That lawsuit relating to the expansion of downtown's tax incremental finance districts was filed by a group called the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, otherwise known as WILL. After the break, we'll be joined by the president of that organization here on a special call-in edition of Spectrum West, updating the Confluence Project. We invite your calls, 800-228-5615. It would be a good time to call in, 800-228-5615. Andrew Dowd of the Leader Telegram stays with us through the hour as well. This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for WPR comes from Hooper Corporation, supplying custom construction services, including electric power, mechanical, and green technology to commercial, industrial, and utility customers nationwide. Hooper Corporation, a Wisconsin company since 1913. Support also comes from the Artist Series at UW Eau Claire, presenting the first adaptation of Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird by the National Players, April 21st in Schofield Auditorium. Details at uwec.edu/activities.
The Confluence Project is our topic all hour long on a special call-in edition of Spectrum West. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Al Ross will be back next week. Eau Claire Leader-Telegram reporter Andrew Dowd is with us, and we're now joined by the president of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, also known as WILL, Rick Essenberg. Rick Essenberg, welcome to Spectrum West.
Good morning. Thank you.
Now, Rick Essenberg, your organization filed suit last month seeking to set aside the city's actions relating to the creation of tax incremental financing, or TIF districts, downtown that relate to aspects of not only the Confluence Project, but also other downtown projects that are either planned or underway. In a summary, so that we can understand this, what is the basis for the suit?
Well, the tax incremental financing law, if you take it and you look at it and you read it, it doesn't simply say that TIF districts are a way for municipalities to give money to favored developments. There are certain requirements that have to be met, and there are good reasons for that. TIF districts distort the tax base, right? They favor some taxpayers over others by allowing their increment to be spent on something that benefits them specially, or in this case, to receive a substantial cash payment from the municipality. So the legislature, in creating these TIF districts, has said that there are only certain conditions under which they can be created. There are four different statutory justifications for the creation of a TIF district, and the one that we're concerned with here is the requirement that the municipality creating the district find that the area in question is blighted. And blight is not, and you'll hear, and I think it was at one point said by people associated with the city of Eau Claire, that blight is whatever we say it is. That's not true. Blight is what the statutes say it is. And it requires that more than 50% of the area be blighted. And if you look at the definition of blight, I'm not going to recite it for you, but it basically requires that what you have is either something that is cleared property that can't be redeveloped, or a slum. And there's nothing in the record and no defensible finding here that the area in question is blighted in that sense of the term. The second problem, of course, is that a joint review board has to be created, and the joint review board has to determine, and it has to be a real determination, that the development would not occur, but for the conferral of this gift of tax money to the developer. And again, there's nothing in the record that this couldn't happen, wouldn't happen without, this massive infusion of what is, and we should call it by its name, it's corporate welfare. And so I think that the lawsuit that we filed on behalf of a group of taxpayers in the city of Eau Claire seeks to hold the city to compliance with that law. It takes the position that, look, that this isn't just a device for you to give money to something that you think is a good idea. Even if you're right, it can only be done in certain conditions, and those conditions weren't met here.
Isn't the intent, though, for TIF districts to give cities flexibility to incentivize planned improvements in downtown areas like Eau Claire's?
Under some circumstances, and under the particular circumstance with the particular type of TIF that was created here, you have to make a finding that the area is blighted. And when you make a finding that the area is blighted, you have to look at the statutory definition, and the statutory definition essentially says that this has got to be an area which is slum is the word that comes to mind as you read the statutory definition, not just an area where you would prefer to have something else there because it would be hipper and more trendy, but something that really needs to be cleared and changed in order to sort of serve the health and the well-being of the community. To simply say, well, this gives us flexibility to throw money around to get in that area something that we prefer is simply not the case. The law doesn't say that.
One of the groups that you're representing in your suit is a group called Voters with Facts, which was established as during the time of the referendums that we've discussed already from last year, in which the city and the county had to decide whether or not to help fund these projects. But in both cases, the votes went in such a way that that funding was supported. But some members of Voters with Facts, which continues to be involved, says these projects would have been done even without the creation of the district. But folks have been trying to develop facilities like this, like the Confluence Project, an arts center, whatever, since the 1970s. And the mix of funding seems to have finally done the trick. If the community wants this project and feels it's worth the property tax shift, what good does this suit do?
Well, one of the problems with TIF districts is that it allows politicians to pretend that they aren't spending the taxpayers' money. They operate under this fiction that, well, what is happening here wouldn't happen unless we gave this money away. Or, you know, this is a blighted area, even though in fact it isn't. And, you know, the problem with TIF districts is they cost everybody else money. The money from this increment that could have been used to pay for police and fire protection and schools, it's not there anymore. And so everybody in the city of Eau Claire is going to pay more on their property tax. But it might be possible for a city simply to go in and say, look, this is what we want to do. We think that this is a wonderful project, and we're going to tax you all in order to give money to this developer in order to make this project happen. But when you use a TIF district, the politicians are hiding behind the TIF, and they're saying, you know what, we're not really raising taxes here. We're just sort of creating this thing that we're going to pretend wouldn't exist if we didn't do this. And by doing that, not only do we avoid responsibility for the decision that we've made, but we essentially, in a way which is not transparent and not apparent to all taxpayers, we essentially shift the cost to somebody else, and we wind up with, you know, some people paying effectively paying a higher property tax rate than other people.
Rich, one thing about this is Andrew Dow from the Leader Telegram. When you mentioned taxpayers being burdened with the TIF district, but the process of a TIF district states for a certain number of years that the taxes on those new buildings are what is paying off the city's initial borrowing to put in roads and other infrastructure in those areas. Don't taxpayers only pay for a TIF district if it suffers a catastrophic failure, if it cannot repay those debts by the time that it is statutorily required to end?
Well, this is one of the reasons that the but-for test is important, because if the but-for test is simply sort of a wink and a smile, the fact that there is this tax increment that wouldn't exist if we hadn't have given this money away is a fiction. And so, you know, effectively you are paying for it is affecting the other tax. It is affecting the other taxpayers, because the money that is not available, right? This incremental financing, which is now being used to pay off the subsidy to the developers, is not available for other uses. And so one of two things has to happen. Either the city doesn't have money to, you know, that it otherwise would have to spend on police and fire and schools, or the taxes of everybody else has to go up. And what's insidious about it, and it's why the legislature has restricted the circumstances under which it can be used, only if the but-for test is made, in this case only if it meets the statutory definition of blight. The legislature has done that because the legislature understood that this is a distortion of the tax base, that this is essentially imposing costs on a group of people in order to benefit a particular private party, and that should be done only when it's absolutely necessary, and that's why it's important to comply with the law. And it's why it's important, I think, that the courts need to sort of step up and enforce these laws so that you know, we won't hear municipal officials claim that blight is whatever we say it is, because that's not what the, that's not the way the law is written, and it's not the way the law is intended to work.
Rick Esenberg, thank you for joining us today on Spectrum West. Rick Esenberg is president of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. One more question, if I may. Do you have a sense as to what the timing is of the suit, and when we might know what the results are?
I think I heard somebody else say that there was a suit filed last year, and now it was sort of in the process of getting the final arguments being made. Yeah, that's not unusual for litigation like this. Maybe this will go a little bit quicker. We'll certainly try to move as quickly as we possibly can, but you know that you know, courts have heavy dockets, and you know, sometimes things can't move as quickly as we would like.
Rick Esenberg of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, which is suing the city of Eau Claire for its use of TIF districts to fund downtown development, including portions of the Confluence Project. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
We are a few minutes away. We have a few minutes remaining in the show. We do invite you. I see a couple of calls were on but dropped off. We'd invite you to get back in right away, 800-228-5615. If you'd like to join the conversation, we would love to have you along. Andrew Dowd, the vote a year ago pushed the Confluence Project forward, and it happened after a very aggressive campaign by supporters to get out the vote, to the point at which there was almost an implication that if you voted against the Confluence Project, you were against the arts or against downtown development or unpatriotic or didn't like apple pie or whatever. I mean, it was a very powerful and very sophisticated campaign. Is the continuing opposition to this project by some groups and individuals a byproduct of what was an aggressive campaign a year ago?
It was kind of a surprise that for a little bit the Voters with Facts group, the one that's generally opposed to the Confluence Project, that after that referendum it seemed like it was relatively quiet. But then they fired right back when there were a few other city decisions impacting the Confluence Project around last summer and fall, and they've still been a persistent group that's shown up to city council meetings when they're going to be addressing tax increment finance districts, downtown taxing districts, and also the Confluence Project contribution. So that group has still been around, and they've been pretty vocal.
Well, speaking of the elections, one of the vocal members of that group was up for election in the city council race just on Tuesday of this week, and at this point it looks like he has won re-election.
Oh yeah, Bob Von Hayden, he's the incumbent councilman for District 4, which is Eau Claire's west side, and he's been one of the critics on the council, and in sometimes in votes, though, he has voted with the majority in favor of the project. But he's been one of the people they're asking a lot of probing questions about the city's involvement in it. Indeed, on Tuesday night, I think that was the closest election I've ever had to cover. At the end of the night, it came down to an 8-vote lead he had over challenger Sandra McKinney, who a big part of her campaign, she said, was predicated on supporting downtown revitalization. And a big chunk of that is the Confluence Project. We're actually going to be waiting until Monday now to find out the official results of that race, because the city had enough absentee ballots out there where theoretically the results of it could swing into Sandra's favor, or of course it could mean a bigger margin for incumbent Bob Von Hayden. And the importance of that going forward is Bob has been about one of four city council members on the 11-member council to be asking a lot of questions and being very critical of things, digging pretty deep into the project and its ongoing finances. And so having his voice on the city council, he's been one of the people who has really challenged the project. And, having him around would be keep it pretty interesting, I'd say that.
We've got a caller, John from Chippewa Falls. Welcome to Spectrum West and our program on the Confluence Project. Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess my question would have been better with the director from the university. I love the project a lot. The only thing I really disagree with is the student housing downtown. I didn't think that was a very good idea.
Okay. We actually, Mike Rindo did hang around in the studio, even though we had dropped him. We could bring him back in. Do you have a specific concern?
No, I'm just a little concerned about the university involved with downtown. And as far as bringing the student housing down there, it's just, it seems more like they should find a better way to do it rather than bring the dormitories down there.
Mike Rindo.
Sure. We developed a 10-year master plan that did a comprehensive housing demand study. At UW-Eau Claire, we've had a chronic shortage of housing for our students, and it's really gone on for decades, where not only are all of our rooms that we have available on campus full, all of our resident assistants have roommates, and that's not a best practice in higher education whatsoever. And all of our study lounges and all of our residence halls also have 4 to 6 students in them. So we've got about 175 students that live in study lounges, and typically we have students living in hotels, at least in the fall semester, sometimes 50, sometimes 250. When we looked at our housing, we came to the conclusion that we needed to develop additional housing not only on campus to meet that demand, but also to look at the possibility of working with private developers who would be interested in doing housing that would be suitable for university housing, but not necessarily owned and operated by the university. And that's really what the Confluence housing represents. It's 119 apartments that could house up to 375 people, not necessarily all students. It could be some market-based housing as well. So the master plan actually called for us to work on having a development off campus that's in close proximity to campus, in addition to our on-campus housing. And one final note is we have about 3,750 students that live on campus out of our total student population, typically between 10 and 11,000. So we have about 7,000 students that live out in the community, and many of them live in the area of downtown and right across the river from downtown on the in the historic Randall Park neighborhood.
Thank you to our guests today, Mike Rindo of UW-Eau Claire, Ben Richgruber of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council, Rick Essenberg of the Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty, all of whom joined us for parts of the program. And thanks also to Andrew Dowd of the Eau Claire Leader Telegram, who joined us for the whole show. Mort Cypress is our on-air producer today. Thanks to Mackenzie Wagner and Debbie Brown for getting the word out about this show. Al Ross will be back again next week with Spectrum West. More interviews, information, and interesting stories about the arts, culture, and humanities here in Western Wisconsin. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Thanks for joining us. This is Wisconsin Public Radio.